Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
Chilling in any realm. So what I'm saying to you is Mitt Romney, he's speaking to a population of this, a segment of the population who does not like to see people other than a white man in the White House or in any other elected position. Let's be real clear about it. Let's be real clear about it. Mitt Romney is speaking to a group of people out there who don't like folks like President Barack Obama in any elective or leadership position. We know what's going on here, and some people may not be afraid. Some people may be afraid to say it, but I'm not. I'm not afraid to say it. He's speaking to that fringe out there who do not want to see anybody other than a white person in a leadership position. Senator Miller said it before she died.
Senator, do you...
And I agreed with her.
Okay.
This is not about anything other than they don't want President Barack Obama in office as president, and for all of the reasons that you and I and a lot of other people understand.
Do you really believe...
You know the drill... 1 minute after the hour right here on Blog Talk Radio. It is Reese on the radio. I am your host, Reese. Mary, Mary, while you're bugging is here. It is July the 24th, 2012, a week from today in New York.
Yes, sir. 1 week from today.
Hopefully we'll find out something new, but we probably won't.
Well, 1 week from yesterday, we'll be there.
What's today, Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know what I mean. Well, we'll be on our way 1 week from. So, yeah, thank you. So we have to talk about those comments. In the Virginia area, this is a state senator. Her name is Louise Lucas. She is Virginia State Senator Louise Lucas. And she is screaming about Mitt Romney talking to that fringe Caucasian, because she had to stop herself. Because even she knows that using the term Caucasian is a racial slur coming out of this radical's mouth.
Well, in the manner that she was going to use it.
Oh, absolutely. That's the manner she intended to use it.
Well, Ms. Lucas, I'm a resident of the state of Virginia, and I won't be voting for you to get back into office.
No, it's time for this broad.
You got to go right along with your brother, Barack Obama.
That's right. In fact, yeah, that's the whole thing. I don't know whether or not her election comes up this year, though. Is her election up this year?
I don't know.
It may not be.
I didn't even know she was the center of senator
anyway,
in Virginia.
But here's the whole conversation. She had it with the local radio host, a guy by the name of Fredrickson. I might be too close to the mic. Thanks, JC. I'm bubbling. I apologize. Okay, so let's play it again. This is her talking about Mitt Romney and Mitt Romney's attacking President Obama. And she says that he's speaking to a base, a fringe base, who do not want to see an African-American in a leadership role.
In any realm. So what I'm saying to you is Mitt Romney, he's speaking to a population of this, a segment of the population, who does not like to see people other than a white man in the White House or in any other elected position. Let's be real clear about it. Let's be real clear about it. Mitt Romney is speaking to a group of people out there who don't like folks like President Barack Obama in any elective or leadership position. We know what's going on here, and some people may not be afraid. Some people may be afraid to say it, but I'm not. I'm not afraid to say it. He's speaking to that fringe out there who do not want to see anybody other than a white person in a leadership position. Senator Miller said it before she died.
Senator, do you...
And I agreed with her.
Okay.
This is not about anything other than they don't want President Barack Obama in office as president, and for all of the reasons that you and I and a lot of other people understand.
Do you really believe now that this is still about race?
I absolutely believe it's all about race, and for the first time in my life, I've been able to convince my children finally that racism is alive and well.
Even in Virginia?
In Virginia, how about all across this nation? and especially in Virginia?
Very good question, Mary. Ask it again.
How'd you get elected, Miss Lucas? Because the majority population in the state of Virginia is white, my sister.
It's a brilliant question. And she'll probably regard that as because most of her constituents are black.
It doesn't matter if most of her constituents are black. They don't outnumber white people. So even if every man, woman, and child that was black in the state of Virginia voted for you, and the white people didn't.
Well, she runs a district, so she only gets the people in her district.
What district is she in?
I don't know. I'm going to find that out. Well, JC, find out what district she's in. See if we can get a breakdown. Her name is State Senator Louise Lucas. We'll see if we can get a breakdown of who she is and where she is. But she would probably argue that her constituents voted for her because a majority of them in her district are black. But see, then I would make the argument to her.
Then she's the state senator of, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to
say
that.
Just of Virginia. Well, oh, you yeah. Anyway. So, to make the suggestion that there are people out there who only want to see a white person in the White House or a white person in the areas of leadership roles or
and
in leadership
her
roles.
Or Barack Obama get into office.
Oh, what?
Because it wasn't a black vote that put Barack Obama over the top.
Well, see, again, she would never, ever answer that question because not only is she's not naive, she's ignorant. The fact that she says that the last part of that piece is that our children were finally convinced that there was racism in this country. They didn't believe it before. The 18th district.
Well, can you tell us what the name of that district is?
Yeah, like which particular town?
What county? What?
Prince George, Prince something.
Not Prince George.
It wouldn't
since
be Prince.
92.
Wow. Wow.
Can you hold a Senate seat for that long?
Keep running. You'll stay. Look at Ted Kennedy. He was there for life.
Oh, yeah.
He died. You know, he was there since 76. You know, you look at John Kerry, who's been there since the 80s. You know, he's, you know, state senator. She's a,
so,
you know,
yeah, look, JC, and see what she's done since 1992. What has she accomplished for the black people in her district?
Well, I don't know whether or not she's actually done anything. Most of these people don't do a thing. You know, they don't have what I consider a great track record as far as passing legislation or how it is that they vote. That's pretty much what it is. She's a party-line Democrat. You know, she is clearly a race baiter. But what I find interesting about this is that, well, first of all, the guy didn't challenge her. This guy Fredrickson didn't challenge her once. Didn't challenge
even
her
when
at
she
all.
Suggested that he knew.
Yes,
what she was talking about.
Which I would immediately argue. It's like, what do you mean I know?
Yeah, like, don't bring me into
exactly.
this.
Exactly. And to blanket all of these people, there are people that she's never, ever met before in her life. She hasn't met them. She doesn't know them. She has no idea what's in their heart. And to suggest that Mitt Romney is speaking to a particular base of people out there, you know, if she were to really look at these groups out there who are racist, she would probably find out that a majority of them don't cast an election in either direction.
But this is the thing. If you're so worried about what Mitt Romney is saying, let me rephrase that. If you're so confident in your current president, in your current African-American black president, if you're so confident in him, everybody has, you know, all of these people that are for Barack Obama, they're so confident in him. They know that he's going to get the vote. If you know he's going to get the vote, why are you talking smack? What's the point?
Well, they're not confident.
No, No. But they give the array as if they are confident. They give that just like the Real Talk Blances. Oh, we know. We'll bet you. You better be ready to get off air, my man.
Listen, they are.
Because Hefe, you rolling out for a couple of months.
They know. Okay, the city of Portsmouth.
Of course it's the city of Portsmouth. What's the population in the city of Portsmouth? It's near Norfolk.
Okay, all right, so she's near the Norfolk area. So, yeah, so a huge African-American population there.
Yeah.
Right, so she never has to worry. She doesn't have to worry once.
And what's the J.C., what is the unemployment rate in Portsmouth?
Yeah, there you go.
What? Because I guarantee you it's more than half of the population.
Oh, I'm sure her unemployment rate is well over 9 to 10%. I'm almost certain of it. But here's the interesting part about her. What all of this is a scream of desperation. That's what her argument is, and that's what every race baiter is doing. It is a scream of desperation. When you are desperate, you've got to call out all of these things while you start making these claims about racism and using code words. They use another term that I like to hear all the time. It's the dog whistle.
What the Mitt hell Romney, is a dog whistle?
A dog whistle is, in essence, that only certain people can hear it. Only the dogs can hear it. So
okay.
It's sort of like a dog whistle. They use certain terms
so
that make people's ears go up. I'll give you an example. Mitt Romney today was talking about Barack Obama and how he feels about capitalism in a free market society. Well, today he went, even though he tried to explain himself, he's trying to walk back this whole thing about the roads, you didn't build that, and all this other stuff. While he was trying to walk all that back, he ended up starting the same rhetoric again. Well, Mitt Romney, in response to that in an interview today, said something along the lines of, I think the word he used is, it's foreign to the American way of life. So immediately people called dog whistle foreign. Ah, you're a birther. See what I'm saying? So exactly. So, it doesn't matter what it is that Mitt Romney says, everything he says is going to be played up.
But if
by
Barack
these groups.
Again, if Barack Obama is such the great man that they believe him to be, such the great leader that they believe him to be, then you should just be sitting back, chilling, relaxing, waiting to cast your vote. You know that all you and all your people, black, white, blue, green, doesn't matter, all you liberals know he's doing a great job. You
mm-hmm.
know that he's the cream of the freaking crop.
Right.
He's the swag of the swaggers.
Right.
Why are you even concentrating on the Republicans or on Romney? Or that you have nothing to worry about because your man is the man. He's the shiznit.
Well, you have to understand. Recent poll just came out in Virginia, and Romney and
Romney's winning.
No, it's 44%. It's a dead heat. But here's why it's so interesting. And it's people, especially people like Carr, like Louise Lucas. Let me tell you exactly where her desperation is.
Because Trayvon!
No. Her desperation comes from this. Real simple. No one had won Virginia. No Democrat has won Virginia since Lyndon B. Johnson. Okay? That's the 60s. No, I apologize. I'm so
Barack
wrong.
Obama
it's
won.
Eisenhower. I apologize. Not Eisenhower. Because
Obama won Virginia.
Just last year. He's the first since Lyndon B. Johnson to win it. First Democrat since Lyndon B. Johnson to win Virginia.
First and last.
Right? But now, remember, and he won by 6 percentage points. Won by 6 points.
Which is a lot.
For a red state to go that far in the favor of Barack Obama is huge. So for him to come back to a battleground state like Virginia, he turned Virginia into a battleground state when he won it. And he knew, and everybody knows, especially, what's her name, Louise
Lucas.
She knows that Barack Obama is failing in Virginia. Although Virginia's unemployment rate isn't that bad, it's just under 6%. That's not bad. It's lower than the national average. But it's still bad here because of the fact that he's in a dead heat in a battleground state like Virginia. Now, most polls say that Barack Obama can still win if he loses Virginia. He can still win.
He'd have to win Florida.
But right. That's
but he's not going to win Florida.
Everybody knows that. But Mitt Romney, if he were to win Virginia handsomely, then the election's his. So it's how well Mitt Romney does in Virginia that will really, really help him. And people like this are only starting up this narrative, this whole storyline about Mitt Romney talking to... It's to get people to hear that and start to go, wow, is Mitt Romney racist? Just asking the question is enough for the charge. Remember, it's the severity of the charge that people have to answer to.
Who isn't racist?
Well,
I mean, who doesn't have some type of racism? Who doesn't have some of that? All of us.
Remember the question that you're asking.
We all do.
Remember the question that you're asking here. To suggest that someone is racist is to suggest that someone believes that their race is superior than any others. Now, that would be the true definition of racist. So to ask who isn't racist isn't true. There aren't people out there who believe that their race is better than the other. There are plenty of people out there that believe that their race is no different than the other. And I see you looking at what JC put up.
53.3% population is African American, and 41.6 is white.
Yeah, so.
So yeah.
That's a considerable.
That's
number.
Why you've been there since 92.
Yeah, it's exactly. But,
and how many of that 53.3% of the African American population have jobs? And how many of the 41.6% have jobs of white people? Because I'm not saying that it's only African Americans that don't have jobs. In Portsmouth, not really a big job town. Just not. You'd have to drive into the city to make any money.
Mm. So
meaning
it's really,
Richmond,
really small
or,
town, small town?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
8.1% unemployment rate. Told you. I knew it was going to be above, right at the regular average.
That's what the national average is.
It's exactly what the national average is. They're
so,
all
so how good are
that's
you just, doing?
That's right, exactly.
How good are you doing, Ms. Lucas, when your state or your city
right.
is...
Your district is just
your
as
district
bad as the
is just as bad as the entire country.
And they won't make that, and they, she'll never ever make that argument. If this were Mitt Romney going up against Clinton,
thank you, JC.
Thanks again, JC. If they were going up against Bill Clinton, or if they were going up against John Edwards, or Hillary Clinton for that matter, if it was Hillary Clinton, then it would be sexist. It would be all the sexist rhetoric. Oh, because she's a woman. Nobody wants to see a woman in charge. They need that minority factor in there to throw it in there. Mitt Romney, there's no evidence whatsoever that Mitt Romney is a racist, or that he treats people in a racist way, or that he's a dog whistle kind of guy. But all you have to do is make the charge, and then he's forced to respond to it. You know, and the media doesn't help.
But
that.
I don't think he should even respond to it. I think.
Oh, he's never going to. No, he'll ignore that. But everybody knows that what this woman is saying is absolute bull. The only two things that she could say in that interview, and I wish I could play the whole thing, but I figured I didn't want to do all of that. The only other thing that she could say is, she knows, you know that this is not Obama's fault, this is Bush's fault, and the Bush economy, this is not his fault. Barack Obama is trying, and that's all you're going to hear. Barack Obama is trying.
But Barack Obama said if he doesn't do what he said he was going to, what he promised the American people, that he would be a one-termer. So enjoy your small stay, the rest of your small stay at the White House, because you're out of there.
Well, I think I would have expected this woman to do something smarter than that. But you know what? She's a liberal. She's from Virginia. And I should have known better. You know, I can't expect people to behave any better than what they are. They've got a real serious problem. They're scared. They're witless. They don't know what they want to do or what they're going to do in order to save this man's presidency. They all feel invested in it. And, you know, when it fails, you know what she's going to be screaming the next time she's out there. You know, don't have me lose my job. You saw what they did to the last black person that was in office. That'll be her screaming. That'll be her mantra. That's what she's going to scream. We'll take a break. When we come back, the gun control lobby is out there. I've got two great pieces that I need to play for you, and one is by Mayor Bloomberg. And when you hear he is suggesting, you are going to be stunned. I'm telling you, you always are. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll be right back. Stick around.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gotavote.org to register now. That's gotavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reason Radio.
He said, I am the Joker. But once again, he was still walking into a movie theater that was showing the Batman.
So you're saying that this guy would have done what he has done, even if, like, Steel Magnolia was playing
out there? He just said, I'm the Steel Magnolia.
It's Reason on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com. If I don't recognize your name, you're Rod Nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. That's the guy, Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
so he's dressed like a chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, he is.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar. It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest PACs. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyists.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop, and she's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointing to the number two position at the Defense Department a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership or all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese. I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com. after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com, July 24th, 2012. I want to play this audio because, again, as I said before, there's a, the whole gun lobby, you know, the anti-gun lobby is out there, and as usual, they are going nuts. And one of the biggest lunatics out there running their mouth is New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Now, I don't know whether or not you've heard this audio before, but I'm sure you remember it. Bloomberg is a nanny state kind of guy, and he's a radical liberal. And most people will bring this argument up when you tell them, you know, he's a radical liberal. They go, no, he ran Republican in 2000. Yeah. We know. Of course he ran on a Republican ticket, but that's not enough to make you a conservative. He's now referred to himself as an independent. Just put an L next to your name. Aside from being a liberal, you're a loser. But you might remember this. Bloomberg talked about sugary drinks.
Well, the way it would work is simply those organizations, those industries that we regulate, which are restaurants and movie theaters and carts, they can still sell 32 ounces of a sugar drink to you, but they'd have to put it in two containers. And the idea here is you tend to eat all the food in the container in front of you. If it's a bigger container, you'll eat more. If somebody put a smaller glass or plate or bowl in front of you, you would eat less. And at this point, there's an epidemic in this country of people being overweight, bordering on obesity. The number percentage of the population that's obese is skyrocketing. In New York City alone, the number of deaths from smoking has declined so much and the number of deaths from obesity has gone up so much, those two are about to cross. We're going to have more deaths from obesity than from smoking. We've got to do something about it. Everybody's wringing their hands saying, got to do something. Well, here is a concrete thing. You can still buy large bottles in stores, but in a restaurant, 16 ounces is the maximum that they would be able to serve in one cup. If you want to order two cups at the same time, that's fine. It's your choice. We're not taking away anybody's right to do things. We're simply forcing you to understand that you have to make the conscious decision to go from one cup to another cup.
You know, liberals use that language, forcing you to understand, and you, as you heard in the beginning, that, you know, it's a fact that you, telling you what you will do, you will eat less and drink less if they put a smaller portion in front of you. That's what you will do. He would know because he is a liberal. He knows what you will do. And we have to force people to understand. So, of course, what does he do? He's one of the first guys to jump on this anti-gun thing. Now, I want you to listen to what it is that Mike Bloomberg is saying now in order to get people to get guns off the street. And I want to understand the logic here. He's on with Piers Morgan on CNN, and he said this.
Why do so many Americans not feel angry enough to demand further gun control?
Well, I would take it one step further. I don't understand why the police officers across this country don't stand up collectively and say, we're going to go on strike. We're not going to protect you unless you, the public, through your legislature, do what's required to keep us safe. After all, police officers want to go home to their families. And we're doing everything we can to make their job more difficult, but more importantly, more dangerous by leaving guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them and letting people who have those guns buy things like armor-piercing bullets. The only reason to have an armor-piercing bullet is to go through a bullet-resistant vest. The only people that wear bullet-resistant vests are our police officers, and that's true across this whole country. So we should, at some point, we have to understand this is our children or grandchildren or us. But for the police officers, it's much more immediate because when you and I hear shots, we run away, they run towards it.
So he's suggesting that the police go on strike. Just don't patrol the streets.
And when they don't patrol the streets, then we'll ask our legislators to enforce gun laws, to get all the guns off the street. Tell the cops, go on strike. Can you believe this guy?
Yeah, mind.
This is the mayor of New York City, one of the most congested islands and places in the goddamn country, and he said the police across the country should go on strike.
No. Reese, why not let New York City alone go on strike? Leave the goddamn bloodshed on his hands.
If he thinks that the police going on strike is going to stop crime, it's going to accelerate. It's going to accelerate. Justin, you there?
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of young friends?
Yeah.
Okay. What do your young friends think of the police?
They don't like them.
That's right. They don't like them. And not having the cops on the street would be a good thing for young people, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not suggesting that you would. But do you have a couple of friends that would just go rampant if all the police officers went on strike?
Yeah.
Hence my point, ladies and gentlemen. So here you got a bunch of criminals out there with illegal guns. They're going to run through and terrorize the streets with these handguns, these illegal handguns that they have. And Bloomberg thinks that that's a good thing, that people are going to start an uprising and start going out to the polls and demanding that their legislators go out there and do something about it. Does he not think that he's going to see a backlash if the police department decided we're going to go on strike because Bloomberg suggested it? Don't they think that anybody in their right mind would go, Bloomberg, the police officers are no longer patrolling our neighborhoods. You told them to go on strike so they can get guns off the street. They go on strike and we're being terrorized. Only a moron would suggest such a thing. Nothing could be the dumbest thing I ever heard in my entire life. And here's where it goes further. One of the brothers of a young lady who died in Colorado. She was killed. And the brother's name is Jordan Gowie. And I'm going to get his audio real quick. Just to show you how these people don't seem to get it. That this is got to be the dumbest thing that anybody could be arguing now about the gun law, but this whole anti-gun movement. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But listen to the question that he's asked. He's burying his sister. His sister has just died. He is supposed to be doing an interview talking about the victims. And this is Michael Eric Dyson. JC, you know this moron well. Michael Eric Dyson. This is an interview he had with Jordan Gowie and asks him about what happened to his sister and then goes into a question about gun laws. Sorry, my apologies. Here I go again with my audio.
Do you think that there should be a push for tighter gun laws?
Sorry, my audio is screwed up again. Here we go.
Do you think that there should be a push for tighter gun laws, given the horror that you've just endured and how it has impacted you personally? Do you feel compelled to push for tighter gun laws?
Well, here's the thing. We can try to politicize this and make some sort of polarizing debate and make this a tenet of the election. But that's not what we're here to do right now. We're here to celebrate the lives of the victims that have been lost. If somebody wants to do harm to somebody, they're going to find a way to do it, whether it be with a weapon such as a rifle or whether it be with any sort of means. We should actually start to think about why people are doing this. And the reason they're doing this is because they want their names out there. If you look at Breving, he killed 77 people in Oslo so that he could he could get his manifesto out there. He wanted those 600 pages read by the world. And what we're doing right now, by talking about the shooter rather than talking about the families, is we're providing them with a platform that they're using to get their names and their stories out there.
Well, why don't we talk about the platform you have to tell us about your sister. Tell us about her story and what makes her life so compelling to us.
Well, it's just not just my sister. It's the other families. I mean, if you look inside of this, and amidst chaos, three people arose as heroes. You had John, Alex, and Matt, who all died to protect the ones that they loved. And this was a chaotic scene. These people had dreams. These people had promise. These people had so much more to live for, and they were all cut short. So now it's about getting their stories out there, not just my sister. My sister's story has been told. I want the rest of the victims to come out there and explain their stories to you and to the rest of the world and get this coward's name and this coward's image off of the national media circuit.
Certainly a humanistic impulse in the midst of incredible grief and agony. We thank you so much, Jordan Garvey, for joining us here tonight.
Thank you.
Again, and using the victims and the victim's family to get this narrative back out there. And it had to be checked.
This nickel slick, five and dime, snake oil chitlin salesman.
This is absolutely insane that, again, this is another freaking liberal ass maneuver. Taking advantage of a situation, taking advantage of a horrific event, and trying to make it about some polarizing issue. Not about what it is. You're there to talk to these victims about what happened to them, how they're coping, how they're dealing. How you doing, man? This is really awful. How's everybody doing? How's your mom? How's everybody? You know, how are you dealing with this? How are you coping? We're so sorry that this happened to you. What do you think about gun laws? Because this happened to you. You must be on our side on this one, right? So they can get people out there and hear these victims say, yeah, we got to do something about the guns, and then have that soundbite. They can have that soundbite. See, even the victims here, they want more gun laws. They want them all. They want gun laws all over the place. Well, let me give you a scenario here. I'm going to give you a pretty good scenario here. And I'm going to borrow from someone who spoke on this about a day or two ago. If more people legally had guns in Colorado, that has some of the most strictest gun laws, that's some of the most strict gun laws. If the people in Colorado were allowed to have guns, were allowed to conceal and carry, and this lunatic would have walked in there and started firing, while his gun was jamming, and he threw the gun down or changed into the gun, somebody would have pulled out a weapon and blasted his ass and ended this quickly. Somebody would have pulled out and they would have fired. Anybody seen that famous video that they were running a couple of days ago? I think it was even last week. A couple of guys run into an internet cafe. One wielding a bat, the other one with a gun. And a 71-year-old guy on the internet, probably checking out, you know, old folks dating or online gambling. Whatever he was doing that day on his sunny afternoon. Two young thugs walk in, one with a bat, one with a gun. They turn their back, the 71-year-old guy comes out and starts a blasting and shoots one of the kids in the buttocks when he's on the ground. And what does the kid turn around and do? The kid turns around and he says that he can't believe he got shot. He didn't have to shoot me in the ass. You came into an internet cafe wielding a gun, scaring the crap out of people, and you're upset that you got shot. It must have blown your mind that somebody else had a gun. It must have drone you crazy. Oh my God, people have guns out here? It changed your whole life, didn't it? I ain't messing with them people anymore. His whole perspective would have changed. And so would the thugs. The thugs' perspectives would have changed. If they knew they were walking up in a place and they knew that people had the ability to carry guns, and could walk around, that women could have the little tutu in the purse, that women could walk around while they're, you know, maybe taking a kid on a play date, you know, in the stroller, about to go visit their friend from school. You know, mom's walking by, minding her own business. She's on the cell phone talking to her girlfriend, saying, you know, her man is no good. I'm with the kids all day. Hey, bitch, give me your purse. Sure, no problem. I'll be happy to give you my purse. Real quick. It'll be over in a heartbeat. And that's it. Real simple. Because they think that if everybody's got guns, people are just going to run around shooting each other. That's what the whole idea is that if everybody has a gun, that means that they have means to shoot. They'll just shoot anybody. We had a guy on a couple of months ago. JC, do you remember that lunatic's name that we had on the show? He was talking about the stand your ground law in Florida, but he didn't have a leg to stand on. I don't know why.
Give me a second. Let me go through my files. Hold on.
His name is escaping me. And his argument was, to give you a perfect example of what this guy's argument was that there were certain stand your ground laws where guys were killing people who got into a tussle with their neighbor or somebody that they knew. And so I asked him whether or not this was an epidemic in Florida. And he came up with 10 stories. Florida has a population of millions. And he came up with 10 stories to at least to suggest that this was some sort of epidemic. And then, of course, Mike in Florida called in because he knew the story and knew that the guy had been constantly harassed by the guy he shot. And again, he was standing his ground. And the guy was drunk when he came over. You know, I never liked you, man. Your dog is always taking dumps on my love, man. I should punch you in the face. Nah, that's not going to happen, sir. not
today.
Put a hold on that. Then after I do it, I go, hey, Fluffy,
go take a dump on his lawn.
After the fact. It'd have been that simple. Guy runs up in your place. Give me all the money. Not today. Not having that today. I'll sign all the paperwork. I'll fill out all the affidavits. But I'm not losing any of my goods today. I'm not getting robbed again by you thugs. You rob me once, you'll be in here every day. You'll be telling your friends how you made a big score. How much jewelry you stole. How many Adidas sneakers you ripped me off of? That's not happened today, homie. I keeps it real. How you like them apples? That's the way I would look at it. Now look, I would never ever want to be shot with a gun. Which is why, you know, I got to be honest with you. I got to go through the proper channels. I've got to go through the proper channels. There are people out there who will harm you. Now, I'm not saying I got beef or anything like that, but I have things to protect, like my home, my person, my goods and services. Oh, hell, I have a future. As one famous radio host used to say, I've got a future. And if it gets thick in the field, or hot in the hood, or whatever else happens, something's got to be done. It's got to be done. This guy is in there. All it would have took was just one. Somebody could have came up behind him while they were running away. While he was facing everybody else, somebody could have came up behind him and that would have been it. Or let's say he'd have walked in there, blazing, guns blazing, you had at least five guys inside the movie theater. This guy is popping them off like crazy, like a crazed lunatic. Response would have been quick. It would have been over. He wouldn't have stood a chance. Wouldn't stand a chance. That's why this is a joke. This gun lobby crap is ridiculous. Anti-gun lobby. What'd you say?
Yeah, that's the only email that I didn't keep.
I didn't hear you.
All the rest. That's the only one that he's the only one that I didn't keep.
Oh, you didn't keep his name?
For my life. No. And I'm aggravated that I didn't.
Don't worry about
it. Pertaining to the show on a separate folder.
His name will come to me. I promise it'll come to me. We'll take a break. We come back. I got some more stuff to talk about. I got to talk about John Stewart going in on Brian Ross. It was a great piece he did on Comedy Central last night. I got to play it. So we'll talk about that when we get at the top of the hour. I got some other news I need to get into. We'll get into that when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
Hi, Bill Maher here. Sarah Palin agreed to do commentary at Fox News, which is actually very similar to her day job, talking to a baby with Down syndrome.
Speaking of dumb ones,
it's not because they have breasts. It's because they are boobs.
I hope Sarah Palin gets in so that they split the MILF vote.
That's not sexist.
I would like to announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC.
I thought about Malia and Sasha. I want them to be able to speak their mind in a civil and thoughtful way. And I don't want them attacked or called horrible names because they're being good citizens.
I would like to give that PAC $1 million.
Sarah Palin, the strange family of inbred weirdos.
She Levi over and over until a baby fell out.
The Maverick and the Milk.
They fined CBS $1 million for Janet Jackson's nipple. Think what they could get for Hillary Clinton's cunt.
That's not sexist.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse.
She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I don't know any woman in America that thinks that being called a slut is funny.
Please welcome Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Being part of a democracy involves argument and disagreements and debate, and there's a way to do it that doesn't involve you being demeaned and insulted.
Speaking of dumb,
this is a Category 5 moron we have on our hands, and I am unapologetic.
Top 10 highlights of Sarah Palin's trip to New York City. Number 2, bought makeup at Bloomingdale's to update her slutty flight attendant look.
I'm going to try to lead by example.
During the 7th inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
To send a message to all our young people, I'm going to try to lead by example.
Speaking of dumb quads,
Maher decided to help President Obama out and give him a financial boost.
He's donated $1 million.
Last week, I said goodbye to $1 million. I made a contribution to Obama's Super PAC.
This ends up being a teachable moment.
I wouldn't put anything past this stupid country.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse. I'm going to try to lead by example in this situation.
You're seeing a president adopt policies which affect our economy based not upon what's right for the American worker, but instead what's right for their politics. The National Labor Relations Board, now stacked with union stooges selected by the president, says to a free enterprise like Boeing, you can't build a factory in South Carolina because South Carolina is a right-to-work state. That is simply un-American. It's political payback of the worst kind. It is wrong for America, and it is something that will stop under my administration. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Well, we're moving on. I
It's only right that we pay tribute to an American icon, a patriarch of the Jefferson family, Mr. Sherman Hemsley, dead at age 74. I didn't even know he was sick. I didn't even know he was in the hospital. It's hard to believe, for me personally, a guy could play one role, which is very rare in the Hollywood business. He could play one role that would define an entire career and it still be relevant today. A lot of factors that people don't know about Sherman Hemsley and his character, George Jefferson, and the Jeffersons. The Jeffersons were Norman Lear's most successful television series. And Norman Lear, who bought shows like Rhoda, Good Times, All in the Family, Archie's Place... what were the others?
Maude.
In fact, All in the Family had the most spinoffs of any other television series in history. I think at one particular time, Marla Gibbs, who played
Florence,
Marla Gibbs was going to get her own spinoff from the Jeffersons. Did she get one for a while?
Yeah, she was a manager of a hotel cleaning crew.
Hotel cleaning crew. That's exactly right. That was one of the final episodes she was on at the Jeffersons, and she had gotten her own show. Banter between her and George Jefferson was classic. The way they used to rag on each other, it was, you know. It was one of those famous sort of I want to say ragging moments between those two. George Jefferson was iconic. No one had ever seen a character like his ever. Everyone said that he was the black version of Archie Bunker. I beg to differ, because what I believe about George was what George Jefferson's character did was prove that. That kind of attitude or old school attitude about your own personal beliefs was most multiracial. You know, it was really based upon where it is that you came from, that you had those views. You can call George Jefferson racist, but George Jefferson's animus towards white people was because he felt he made it and he wasn't going to let anybody tell him that he didn't, that he hadn't arrived. So he had this immediate sort of pushback on anyone who made him feel like he wasn't somebody. That he hadn't arrived, that he hadn't achieved, that he didn't deserve the same respect as everybody else. That's why I said it's different than Archie Bunker. Archie Bunker was a working class stiff. He was a foreman, you know, who worked at a warehouse. And he automatically thought that everything was due to him, that he was the rightful owner of America, that everybody else was a second-class citizen. George Jefferson's character came from a different place. It was like, yeah, he had that sort of, like, you know, tension with white people, but it wasn't about him not or him being better than anybody else. He just wasn't going to let you tell him that you weren't as or he wasn't as good as you. And I think that was what was iconic about his character. If more people moved away from the George Jefferson of the comedic sense of his character, the comedy sense of his character, where George was always ended up looking like the fool at the end, he always made the mistakes, you know, Isabel Sanford, his wife, you know, Wheezy, was always there to sort of pick him up when he falls down. But the only reason, if you really understood that sort of relationship, you understood that that was about, she understood what he was doing. She was just trying to tell him every time, you don't have to prove anything to anyone long. You are somebody. I think that whole thing with the Jeffersons, why it's so iconic, is because here it is, you had a woman
who stayed at home, she wore fancy clothes, she worked for the health system, charitable, and she loved everybody. And George, on the other hand, was just leery of everyone who was around him.
Did he not strike you as a Republican?
Excuse me?
Did he not strike you as a conservative?
Does he strike me as a conservative?
Yeah.
His value system, I believe it did. But you know why I don't believe that? Because I look at George Jefferson, and look at the one thing that you never, ever saw George Jefferson with. George Jefferson had no friends. I want you to really think about it. He had no friends. There was no character on that show. It was George Jefferson's good friend. Everybody who tried to get, you know, the only thing he cared about was his son, Lionel, and cared about me. It was Lionel, his family. That was the only people he cared about. The only people he loved. He had no friends. Sure, he had Mr. Bentley across the hall, and sometimes, you know, he figured out he had that sort of agita going on with Tom. He had no friends. So if George Jefferson, in a lot of ways, was alone, he was alone. Because he was the only one who thought the way that he thought. And he was okay with that. One thing that I associate with George Jefferson is that everybody tried to tell George that he was wrong. Everybody told George that he wasn't thinking. George never, ever changed the way he thought about anybody, and he did it forever. This
right.
is what I never for anybody. He stood his ground. So in those ways, I see him being that. Because he just stood his ground. Now, Justin, I know you never watched this movie, right?
Do what?
You never watched this movie.
Yeah, I have.
Get out of here.
What are you talking about?
You watched the Jeffersons? That seems a little out of range for you.
Yeah, I watched it.
I'm stunned. What'd you watch?
Do I? You're going in and out.
Yeah, you're fading in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying, what'd you watch? You watch it on TV Land or
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's what I thought. Anyway, I just want to say this. They talk about his personal life. I didn't even know this. They said Helmsley was a self-proclaimed fan of 1970s progressive rock bands, including Yes, Gentle Giant, and Nektar. On his appearance on Dinah, Helmsley performed a dance to the Gentle Giant song Proclamation from the Power of Glory. After his dance, Joe was laughing and asked what kind of music that was. Sherman then proceeded to give a 5-minute speech on Gentle Giant. Helmsley can also be seen wearing a Nektar t-shirt during his interview with Norman Lear when Lear hosted Saturday Night Live from Season 2, Episode 26 in 1999. He collaborated with Yes co-founder John Anderson on an album titled Festival of Dreams, which was not released. And as you may know, Helmsley died at his home in El Paso, Texas, of natural causes. So, to an iconic figure, so we say, you know, Godspeed. And I'm looking at his dossier before we go to the top of the hour. I'm looking at the TV shows that he was in. And what makes me laugh is now I have to go search all of them. Kevin Helmsley appeared in an episode of The Incredible Hulk. He was on ER. He was in The Twilight Zone. He was also on, I saw those, Martin and the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I saw those. He also starred on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, which I'm stunned. And everybody remembers him because he was in Family Matters. And he was also in Tyler Perry's House of Pain. That was the most recent thing he did. And he also did a voice appearance and a voice cameo on the episode The Father, the Son, and the Holy Fonz of The Family Guy.
Hmm.
So I never knew that. Again, George Jefferson, an iconic figure. We will miss you. I don't even know what to say. I'm stunned by his death.
I tell you what I like to do. One. I know we don't do shout-outs, but shout-out to Norman Lear, a graduate of my alma mater, Weaver High School, Hartford.
Well, you know what? You have to say shout-out to Norman Lear because this is an interesting factor before we go to the top of the hour. But Norman Lear saw Sherman Helmsley on Broadway. He was doing a Broadway show. Norman Lear asked him to come play George Jefferson on All in the Family. Sherman Helmsley turned it down. Norman Lear said, I'll hold the position for you because I want you to play the role. And he held it for 2 years for Sherman Helmsley.
Wow.
Until he finally took it. So,
and well, a lot of people don't know about Sherman Helmsley as well, that he hated calling Tom honky. He pushed hard. Because he figured that we've come a long way that we didn't have to use those terms.
Right.
But it's funny that's kind of what iconicized him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he was a brilliant actor, at least in that role. I know they hammed him up later on, but he's still iconic, and I'll definitely miss him. He was an icon. There's just no other way to put it. We'll be back with the top of the hour. Stick around.
Banana in the tailpipe.
You're not gonna fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
You've been hanging out with this dude too long.
I got something to say to you, boy. Just exactly what you're trying to pull here.
I'm not trying to pull anything.
Well, let me tell you something. You ain't fooling me for a minute. You think I don't see what you are? You one of those smooth-talking, smart-ass niggas just out for all you can get with your black power and all that other troublemaking nonsense. And as long as you are anywhere around this house, I'm right here watching. You read me, boy? You bring any trouble in here and you just like to find out what black power really means.
Top of the hour, Reese on the radio, 3 minutes after the hour on this July the 24th, 2012. It is a Tuesday, isn't it? Yes, it's a Tuesday. Let me also let everybody know that because it is the 24th, I'm almost certain August 1st. Positive, it'll be August 1st. And let me check my calendar just to make sure that I let everybody know. Yes, August 1st, Wednesday, Reese on the Radio has a huge, huge announcement. It will be a very, very big announcement. There's an addition that I have to tell everybody about, so I hope that you tell all your friends to be here Wednesday. We're probably going to tell it at about 9:05 on Wednesday, August the 1st. So make sure that you tune in. Get everybody to tune in. And unless something changes, we will let you know. I don't believe we're going to do a show on Monday and Tuesday of next week. We may be off. We may do another live on the I-95 show on the 30th. I will make that decision probably on Friday. So we'll do that again since that we have better equipment now. Our phones are better. And our equipment is a little bit better, so we might be able to do that. I really, really want to do another live on the I-95 before I have to go down to New York. Hopefully I'll have some news for you the day before. We are still waiting for prosecutors to finally make their decision on what it is that they're going to do. That's supposed to happen on July 31st. So we will more than likely, it looks quite possible, that we are going to be doing another Live from the I-95 show going up to New York. We'll do that live. We'll have a whole bunch of stuff to talk about on the way, as we did, because that was a great show. It was one of our most listened to shows. I'm stunned at the response. So many people went back and listened to the show. That's even more stellar. Another announcement is, I don't know what happened Friday, but I'm almost certain it had everything to do with the Colorado shooting. But JC, I don't know whether or not you checked it, but the numbers for rebroadcast of Reese on the Radio from this past Friday were the largest we've ever had. So I want to thank everybody who came and checked this out. I'm sure there were some people from overseas, because according to my website, I got people all over the country who have been going onto my website to come find out information about the shooter. And I'm sure that they were directed about the shooter and then directed to the Reese on the Radio show. So I'd like to thank anybody who has been checking out the show to do that. Okay, let's get to this fallout with Brian Ross. And right now the argument about this is, and if you've been living under a rock, there was something stellar that happened in reporting at ABC News. Brian Ross, the chief investigative reporter, chief investigative correspondent at ABC News, did the report on the Colorado shooting. And in trying to get information about James Holmes, the alleged shooter who is now in jail with no bond, the earlier reports, as they were trying to get information on him, Brian Ross logged this report.
Jim Holmes, can you find something that might be significant?
There is a Jim Holmes of Aurora, Colorado page on the Colorado Tea Party site as well, talking about him joining the Tea Party last year. Now, we don't know if this is the same Jim Holmes, but it's Jim Holmes of Aurora, Colorado.
Okay, we'll keep looking at that. Yep. Brian Ross, thanks very much. Let's get the weather from Sam.
Okay, so then some 2-3 hours later, after finally doing some investigative reporting, what he gets paid to do, he then logged this.
We don't know much about him. An earlier report that I had was incorrect, that he was connected with the Tea Party. In fact, that's a different Jim Holmes. He is not connected to the Tea Party. And what we do know about him is that he's a 24-year-old white male who went to Colorado for a PhD.
So there was no apology. No apology was given. Just a correction. Just saying that, you know, earlier report that I gave said that he was a part of the Tea Party. He's not a part of the Tea Party. So Jon Stewart on The Daily Show did something I find amazing, because I think that this really calls for people to respond. Once you get hammered by guys like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert of The Colbert Report, I think you've got to do something. So I think this is actually kind of funny. But it's very telling of how this reacted. And listen to the audience reaction when Jon Stewart tells what happened, because it almost appears as if some of the people in his audience had not seen this report and did not know that Brian Ross had done this. So listen to how the audience sort of gives a, oh, like they were kind of, they were shocked that this happened. But the rest of it is hilarious.
There is one area of this, Matt, that I think is also worthy of comment, and it's the subject of our new segment. What story does a guy have to blow to get in trouble at ABC? You know, obviously when these types of stories occur, news organizations are scrambling to inform the public about the event.
Now, I want to go to Brian Ross here, because, Ryan, you've been looking at investigating the background of Jim Holmes, and you found something that might be significant.
Oh, that's George Stephanopoulos. Anchoring the ABC News coverage of the shooting, throwing to his colleague Brian Ross, who found something, George Stephanopoulos used the phrase, that might be significant. Go.
There's a Jim Holmes of Aurora, Colorado page on the Colorado Tea Party site as well, talking about him joining the Tea Party last year. Now, we don't know if this is the same Jim Holmes, but it's Jim Holmes of Aurora, Colorado.
Obviously, the correct response to that statement is, Brian, I thought you said you had something significant
not a, hey, George, let me interrupt you. I put the name James Holmes into my search engine and hit the I'm feeling lazy button. Of course, Stephanopoulos is in the middle. Stephanopoulos is in the middle of doing a lot of things, and I'm assuming he was under the impression that Brian Ross checks out the he's saying on air before saying it, since Brian Ross is their chief investigative correspondent and not, let's say, the office gossip. Yeah, I Googled Jim Holmes, and he's totally a porn star, and I'm just saying the killer is a porn star. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Oh, that's totally John Holmes, but, whatever. So, of course, 2.5 hours later.
An earlier report that I had was incorrect, that he was connected with the Tea Party. In fact, that's a different Jim Holmes. He is not connected to the Tea Party.
And
what we do know about him is that he's a 24-year-old white male who went to Colorado for a PhD.
No. And I am really sorry. Really sorry. Deeply sorry. Deeply, irrevocably sorry to the innocent man that I casually, baselessly, and publicly accused of, I don't know, maybe being a mass murderer. Because when I was Googling his name, I saw the phrase, the Tea Party, and I thought, oh, that's a pre-existing narrative. I should get that on the TV. This killer may have been a member of the Tea Party. Who gives a what does that have to do anything with anything? Why is that? Huh? George, Tea Party? Low taxes? Mad Men? You do the math. But hey, no harm, no foul, right? Except harm! And this dude isn't even grounded, doesn't get detention. Your ABC sentenced him to Wipeout. And that concludes our segment. Can a brother get a suspension up in this bitch?
So I thought it was brilliant because somebody actually brought light to it. And what's even scary about it is that Jon Stewart is a liberal. He's an extreme liberal. And he just knew that somebody's name had been smeared. The reason why I bring that up is because this story, which came out of the Politico, says ABC News President Ben Sherwood told staff today that last Friday's incorrect report by Brian Ross detracts from the network's otherwise excellent coverage of the Colorado theater shooting, network sources have told Politico. Sherwood's remarks... Sherwood's remark made on the network's daily editorial conference call came the morning after Ross's report and was picked up by late-night comedians Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, which we just played, both of whom used Ross's erroneous suggestion of a Tea Party link to the Colorado theater shooting as fodder for their Monday night routines. On Monday's conference call, ABC News' senior vice president James Goldston also commended the staff for its work, noted the incorrect report, and said that the network was taking steps to ensure it did not happen again. A spokesman with ABC News said the network does not comment on editorial conference calls. And as we also reported here, now ABC News is dealing with conflicting claim by the mother of the Colorado theater shooting suspect. Arlene Holmes issued a statement saying that the ABC's Matt Mosk mischaracterized her when he reported that she had identified her son as the alleged shooter. On Monday evening, ABC News released a new article with details about Mosk's call to the mother and announced that it was standing by its initial report. So ABC News is getting hell for this. And again, I haven't seen Brian Ross as of late on this story for obvious reasons. But I'd like to pose a question. Should Ross be fired? Or should he be suspended? Or what?
And we got Derek the Bounty Hunter on the line. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Hey, what's going on, Reese?
So what do you think, Derek? Do you think we should at least see a suspension by trying to suggest this guy was a member of the Tea Party without any real investigation?
Well, he did a bad investigative report, but, you know.
Well, this isn't the gumshoe, Derek. This is the chief investigative correspondent. He's the leader.
You know what? To be honest with you, Dan Rather got fired for, you know, doing some bad investigative reporting. So, you know, I guess technically you could say he should be at least suspended. Well,
yeah, but what Dan Rather did, think about what Dan Rather did. Dan Rather's reporting was a 60 Minutes 2 expose on George W. Bush's military record with a quote-unquote letter that had fonts that didn't exist at the time the letter was supposed to be printed, and internet bloggers found the mischaracterization of the letter, found out that the font didn't exist. He was exposed by bloggers who are demeaned in the mainstream media. They hate bloggers because they think that bloggers are bloggers are fact-checking them, they're getting the information, you know, faster than them, and they're investigating better than them. And he was exposed. Then he was forced to go on television and apologize for his reporting after his producer was fired, and then he got fired.
Yeah.
So that, he was totally trying to, he mischaracterized the president of the United States. I mean, it was a smear campaign against George W. Bush.
Well, they do a smear campaign against Obama all the time, you know. So.
But when has the evidence ever been, when has the evidence been non-factual?
Bertha.
How has that been disproven?
Dude, he's from Hawaii, man. He was born in Hawaii.
Based on what, though? Based on what evidence?
And the birth of the birth certificate.
Which has now been investigated and proven to be false? So if the birther thing is all you got, and no major networks ever covered that, only bloggers and Sheriff Arpaio...
The Muslim issue?
Wait a minute. Who called him a Muslim?
The Muslim issue. You know, you want him to be a Muslim. You want him to be a Muslim, but then you want to sit there and say he listened to Reverend Wright for 20 years. Reverend Wright's not a Muslim.
What reporter has ever suggested that he was a Muslim?
Man, you guys call him a Muslim all the time.
But what reporter? What reporter has ever gone on the TV with an expose trying to prove that he was a Muslim? Or the fact that he wasn't...
You're right. Yeah, you're right. No Muslim has. No reporter has.
No reporter has. So, sure, there are internet bloggers and Donald Trump. Come on, Donald Trump's no reporter. He's no journalist. Sheriff Arpaio is a sheriff. He's no reporter. So no reporter's ever done that. But this was a reporter trying to associate...
I mean, don't get me wrong. You're absolutely right. He should at least issue an apology. You know, but, you know me. I'm not a fan of ABC. I've always been a CBS, CNN guy. So, you know?
Yeah, like they're better.
Huh?
They're not as bad. I'll admit, CNN has only been bad in several cases. But I'll tell you, CBS is probably the least offender. And the only reason why they're the least offender is because of what happened with Dan Rather. That was a public embarrassment. It destroyed that network. That's the reason why they're third in the ratings.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reason why their ratings have been awful ever since. That's the reason why Katie Couric is out of there. It's because they're... But, okay, so he should at least give an apology, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he should do that.
And it should be public. But he's got to be suspended.
Yeah.
He's got to be suspended. He's got to be removed from the TV show until he gets his credibility back. And I even reported yesterday, if not last night, I think it was yesterday, I even reported how many things this guy has gotten wrong. You remember that whole Toyota recall?
Mm-hmm.
He was the investigative reporter on getting that recall to happen, and it turned out that the report he gave was false. And then they tried to call it an editorial mistake.
Well, like I said, you know, ABC, I guess that's just the way they do their thing. You know, ABC, they try to make themselves seem like they're the forefront out of the, you know, original big three networks, you know. And
well, they claim to be the most watched evening news, but NBC is no better. They're the worst out of the bunch. Okay, but since we're talking about the whole Colorado shooting thing, James Holmes received $26,000 grant from Bethesda-based National Institute of Health. So we're finally realizing where he got the money, and it turns out it's from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
How did this guy get a federal grant?
Well, I mean, you know, he probably had the grades when he was in high school, man. Come on now. How does anybody get a grant, Reese?
Well, I can understand how somebody gets a federal grant. But this guy was living on $2,000 a month from the federal government. And he used that money to go purchase guns. Now, I would like to pose a question. Shouldn't we be blaming the federal government who didn't red flag this kid, even though a shooting range red flagged him?
Well, like I said, man, come on. You know, sometimes it's hard to put a finger on everybody. I mean, the dude was crazy. The dude was crazy. But, I mean, come on, are the federal government, are they really going to follow him like that? They just figured, you know, this guy had grades and he was supposed to, you know, go on and be somebody. And he ended up being crazy. I mean, unfortunately, these things happen, you know? Who saw coming out the blue? Who really saw coming out the blue that this guy was just going to go ahead and flip out the way he did?
I'll admit, no one saw that this guy was a basket case, if indeed he is. And it's never been determined that he was a basket case. But let me ask you this, because you're a gun owner and you're a concealed carry guy.
Yeah.
What do you think of this argument of blaming the guns and asking for more gun control laws?
You know what? Remember, I always got on the fact that I sat over here and I said that I became an armed security guy because I needed my license quickly. They made me spend an extra $50 to take a psychological exam, you know? And I sit over here and say, you know what? Maybe that might be necessary. And everybody, you know, I mean, it's a pain in the butt for everybody have to scrounge for an extra $50, but maybe they should scrounge for an extra $50 to make everybody take a little psychological test to find out if we're giving gun licenses to crazy people. Because, I mean, several of the questions they asked, I swear to God, they asked about 3 or 4 times, you know, just to find out if, you know, you're going to flip out and ask the wrong question. Because, I mean, they give you the test and they tell you no question is right or wrong. But, you know, to me, they go over it. Then, you know, later on, they let me know, okay, you know, we've gone over the test, and this guy's not crazy, so he can go ahead and have a temporary armed security license until the main one comes a month later. You know?
Hold on. Let me ask you this, because you said you took a psych eval or a psych evaluation test for an extra $50.
Yes.
This is so you can get what employment? What kind of employment is this?
So I can get an armed security license. You know,
okay, so an armed security license.
So I can get a temporary, you know, like let's just say you get an armed security job. You know, you apply for it and they want to hire you, but you don't have an armed security license. For you to get a temporary license so you can go ahead and work that weekend, you have to go ahead and take this test. You know, you take the test, they grade it, and then they, you know, evaluate that you're not crazy, and you can go ahead and get the temp license.
Now, did you have to go through that to get your gun?
No, not to get my gun. But maybe they need to go ahead and give that to everybody who has to get a gun also. Because like I said, several of the questions they ask you repeatedly. And I think they ask you that repeatedly just to throw you off. You know, they reword it, but you know it's the same question. You know, just if you're going to be crazy enough to say, no, I need to go ahead and blow this person away. You know?
Yeah, but how do you – okay. So you believe that – now, who do you think should be – responsible for issuing that test to get a gun? Do you believe the government should issue that?
Probably. Or the state at least.
So
state
now...
What's good to me is like this, you know, why did they ask me to take this test? Was it just to get an extra $50 out of me, or were they really trying to find out if I'm crazy?
What do you believe?
means trying to get an extra $50 out of me.
I concur.
Well, okay. All right. First of all, I'll tell you where I have the biggest issue with that. One, nobody should ever have to subject to a psychological test sponsored by the government in any way whatsoever. Because now the government has your medical records and they can deem. Because, see, that's bureaucracy. Now the government deems whether or not, based on their standards, on whether or not you are fit to carry a weapon. And so you remember what we're talking about. We're talking about government bureaucracy. And we're talking about the government having to go through that evaluation, finally getting to you, when they finally get to your paperwork, and then determining based on their own standards. Nobody makes that standard for them. They make that standard. And they say, nah, we don't think this guy is fit. You know, they find out where you live. If you live in a high crime area, they don't want you to have that gun. You know, you live in a heavily populated area. They don't want you to have that gun.
You live near a bunch of schools.
Yeah, exactly. You live near a school. They don't want you to have that gun.
Any kind of major monument or
And remember, we're talking about a test that has no, you know, as you said in the test, there's no right or wrong answer. But of course there's going to be a right or wrong answer when you're talking about government bureaucracy.
You know, well, it was like this. You know, I forget how they took the test and they said, they had three answers, but I think you could only answer, you said that, say you don't want to answer. I think you could only do that like two or three times the whole test. It was like 50 questions, and only two times you could kind of put a pass on it, you know, but the rest you had to answer, you know, yes or no.
And imagine Imagine you do that during a government-issued test. Imagine that happens. He didn't want to answer. Like, can you give me some of the answers? Can you give me some of the questions that they asked at all?
I'm trying to sit over here and think of how they, you know, basically, you know, they, you know, type of questions like, you know, if someone pissed you off, if somebody pissed you off, do you go ahead and, you know, curse them out, or do you, you know,
grab
you know,
your gun?
Situations basically like that, you know, and and I know several times during the test they reworded that question about three or four different times, you know. You know, basically asking me, you know, are you going to go ahead, you know, someone pisses you off, are you going to go ahead and flip out on them, yes or no, or are you going to walk away, you know, that type of thing, you know.
But you know, so then again, if somebody, you know, I don't think that anybody going through a test like that would answer that question and go, I'm going to blow his damn head off. They want to get the gun. You know, they're going to answer.
I was going to say, there's got to be some way we can get separate crazy people from normal people now. You know, there's got to be, you know, all these psychological people, you know, that they pay all this money to. They don't know what could trigger a nutcase off, you know, that they'll answer the question differently to, you know, a sane person. All these like people go and get PhDs and all that crap. They don't know what could set a crazy person off, you know?
And you don't even have to be crazy to be set off. I mean, when the economic downturn started happening, look at what all these so-called sane people started doing. Men were killing their families,
right?
Their wives,
yeah.
And themselves because
man,
of money.
Man, you don't know. One of my most popular bonds this year has been battery domestic violence.
I mean, I always harken back to that Delaware story that happened last year where the guy takes his wife and his 12-year-old daughter, they drive out to the, the 18- or 19-year-old daughter's college. They drive out there. They get to the hotel. They tell the daughter to meet them at the hotel. When the daughter walks in, as soon as she walks in, she sees the mother and the daughter lying on one of the beds in the hotel room. And then he takes his daughter, puts her in the bathroom, and he strangles her and kills her and then kills himself. When they found out who the guy was, he was this huge, like, investment banker or whatever. He had lost, like, $6, $7 million of his company's money, and he killed everybody. I mean, would anybody have thought that this guy was, you know, a psychopath? His social status would have never, ever red flagged him. You know, we never know what's going to set a person off. It's, you know, it's a very irregular thing. I'll let Mike and Florida get it. Mike, I know you don't agree with any government deciding that they're going to mentally test you.
So, Derek, man, last time you bought a gun, right, you filled out the federal form to do the NICS check, right?
Yeah.
Remember, it asks you all these questions like, are you a felon? Are you a citizen? And there's one where it says, are you a user of recreational drugs such as marijuana?
Yeah.
What's your job out there?
Good point. Oh, yeah, you know.
Okay. So, yeah, it's bogus. So you start talking about psychological testing for people to exercise their constitutional rights, you're basically talking about the Tom Cruise movie Minority Report when you're starting to penalize people for future crime, and that's not cool. The reason you have to go through a psych test to be an armed guard is a matter of liability.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, I knew that was the reason why he took that test. It is a matter of liability, especially because they want to know that, look, we tested this guy. This guy seemed normal. You know, he passed the test with flying colors. They also use that to
flip out and start shooting people on our property.
Something's got to be done.
As long as you're not a felon, there's no reason you shouldn't be allowed to buy a firearm.
Hey,
as far as what Mayor Bloomberg was rattling off with his nonsense about armor-piercing bullets,
yeah,
do you know what kind of round will go through any soft Kevlar vest? Any rifle.
Oh, absolutely.
Any rifle.
Derek, did you hear this stuff?
That 30-30 will go through it.
Derek, did you hear this thing that Bloomberg said yesterday on Piers Morgan?
Yeah. He's bugging. Yeah.
Talking about the police going on strike?
No, I didn't hear that part.
Listen.
Why do so many Americans not feel angry enough to demand further gun control?
Well, I would take it one step further. I don't understand why the police officers across this country don't stand up collectively and say, we're going to go on strike. We're not going to protect you unless you, the public, through your legislature, do what's required to keep us safe. After all, police officers want to go home to their families. And we're doing everything we can to make their job more difficult, but more importantly, more dangerous, by leaving guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them, and letting people who have those guns buy things like armor-piercing bullets. The only reason to have an armor-piercing bullet is to go through a bullet-resistant vest. The only people that wear bullet-resistant vests are our police officers, and that's true across this whole country. So we should, at some point, we have to understand this is our children or grandchildren or us. But for the police officers, it's much more immediate because when you and I hear shots, we run away, they run towards it.
So now he's suggesting that the police go on strike.
Okay, first of all, what about all the police officers that were given weapons that used those weapons for ill will? Or that murdered innocent people because they were pulling out their wallets and they shot them up like, you know.
Well, he's not thinking about those people. He's thinking about.
And it's our constitutional right to bear arms.
He doesn't think so.
And who's wearing those vests that we would, that if we had arms like that to penetrate that, why would we be doing that? Probably because we were fighting to save our lives from those people that you so entrust with those weapons, you moron.
The armor-piercing bullet argument that's been put forward by the gun grabbers is just a backdoor way to reduce firearm ownership in general. Because any deer rifle will penetrate a Kevlar vest. Your granddaddy, 100-year-old, 30-30 will do that.
Well. See, again, that's, again, my point. We got Edward in Connecticut on the phone. What's up, Edward?
Hey, what's up, Reese?
So, I'm sure you want to get on this. Mental evaluations aside, I think the scary part about this whole gun lobby thing for me, personally, is the fact that they don't seem to realize the only people who are grabbing guns are getting, who are using them for nefarious reasons or for illegal, you know, for villainous reasons, are people who are getting them illegally. Stricter gun laws are going to keep guns out of people who get them illegally their hands. How does that work?
It doesn't work.
I would love to ask Bloomberg, how does it work? How does tougher gun laws get guns out of people who will get them illegally?
You know, this Bloomberg guy, you know, if these guys, you know, this should never be a test for someone to exercise your constitutional rights. That's what I think. If you're going to start testing people, you know, before they can exercise their constitutional rights, let's start testing people before they vote.
Thank you.
You know, we'd be in a lot less trouble.
Before they vote.
So, I mean, Derek, I got to ask you. So, again, how do you keep, if you got tougher gun laws, you know, let's say the gun laws are pretty much, that's it, no more guns, they're all gone. How do you keep them out of the illegal's hands? The illegal people's, the people who use them illegally, how do you get them out of their hands?
You know, that's the problem. You ain't going to get it out of their hands.
Right.
You know, they need to, you know, in the end, we're going to have to make it so that you can carry a gun anywhere to just, you know, stop these people from, you know, doing their thing, you know?
Exactly.
It's like I go to ATM, I got my hand on the trigger, you know?
Oh, yeah, I don't blame you, dude. Well, you know, people were talking about, you know, if some concealed carry holder had guns at the theater in Aurora, the excuse from the gun grabbers is always, oh, well, you know, there's going to be a crossfire and you don't know you could make that shot. And my response is, asshole, there's a guy standing in front of a giant lit screen shooting at people. He's a pretty easy target.
Damn sure is.
Yeah,
they were saying he was wearing body armor, but that's sounding like that's incorrect, that all the guy was wearing was a, what they call a tactical vest.
Right.
Basically a vest with a bunch of pockets on it. But even if this dude was wearing a vest, if somebody starts popping him in the chest with 9mm or 45 rounds, it's going to get his attention.
Yeah.
Getting a
headshot, you know? If you get within 10 seconds.
If he's wearing that vest, dude, it's going to be like getting hit with a ball-peen hammer. It's going to break a rib.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think when one of the guns jammed, I mean, if somebody was in there with a gun, it would have been a perfect time. The carnage would have been over. All he did was drop one gun and go after another. If there was guys, if that 71-year-old guy who was in the internet cafe who started blasting off on those kids, if he was in that movie theater, you don't think he would have? I mean, he would have stopped this guy right in his tracks.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately,
he wouldn't have been in there.
Well, yeah, he wouldn't have been there to be watching Batman.
No, I'm saying he wouldn't have been in there because the laws in Colorado and the movie theater policy do not allow people with concealed weapons on their property.
Yeah.
What?
It's a perfect
place.
You know what
I'd say
to that, my friend?
The movie theaters don't allow it because, and I'm assuming because there's kids there.
Well, there are just certain
businesses.
They're
not going to know I have it.
Yeah, I mean, what do they do? Do they search you at the door?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but,
who would know I have
yeah, they don't search you at the door, but if you're someone who wants to obey the laws like most gun owners do, you know, you have respect and you don't take your weapon into some place that is prohibited.
Exactly.
I would tend to agree with the obey the state law rather than some silly policy from some corporation.
I just don't patronize their business.
Well, that would work too.
Yeah.
The only place that I won't carry is the post office because that's a federal issue.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And which is stupid because you might need a gun at the post office.
Yeah. Maybe if I'm in the mid-90s, Mike.
I'm shopping for.
The same disgruntled worker comes in with a grudge.
Now, did you guys hear about this other guy that got arrested who was at the Batman? He was at another Batman on the show.
Yeah, in Maine. Yeah, in Maine, yeah.
And he said he wanted to shoot his boss?
Yeah, that guy's crazy.
Man.
Yeah, that guy is definitely off.
And, you know, they're making a big deal about the types of weapons he had. But if, you know, we fought World War II with an 8-shot M1 Garand and an 8-shot Colt 45 and killed millions of Japanese and Germans. So
right.
His weapons is not an issue. I'd be terrified if somebody walked into a theater with an M1 Garand at 30-06. Jesus.
Yeah, but you know what?
Bill O'Reilly did some rant last night about guns, and he said people don't need to have high-powered weapons like an AR-15. The AR-15 round is so weak, it won't even go through a cinder block. It's not high-powered. If anything, it's low-powered.
Yeah, but you know what? But see, guys like Bill O'Reilly and guys, these gun snatchers, these guys don't know anything.
Are you saying something bad about Bill O'Reilly?
I got to say it because, I don't always agree with him.
You watch him every night.
But I don't always agree with him. There's one thing interesting about this. Most of these people who are gun snatchers who don't like guns or this sort of anti-gun lobby, you notice that most of them know nothing about guns?
They know absolutely nothing about it.
You know, they couldn't tell you a 22 from a 38. They couldn't tell you an M16 from an AR-15 anyway. Any anti-gun person would look at an AR-15 and say, "Hey, what's that, an M16?" They wouldn't know.
Okay, so we have all these. We have Derek and Mike, and they both obviously own weapons. And Edward, I believe, has one too. Is it true that a round of a 22 is more dangerous than like a 9mm because it can travel? It's so small it can travel through your body.
It's hard for them. Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
I've heard stories that more people have been killed with 22s than any other round, but as far as lethality, no, a 22 is not more lethal than a bigger round. It's just I think that people tend to get shot more with it when you get shot with a 22.
Can it travel through your body because the bullet is so small?
Because that bullet's so small, it's hard for them to, sometimes they can't get it out. You know, that's the whole thing about a 22. Like, sometimes you can get shot with a 22 and it's near your spine, but it's so small that, they don't want to operate and get it out because they could damage your spine. So you're left with this thing in your body,
Well, I understand that, but my question is, do they travel through? Is it possible for your body to get penetrated and then it travels through? Whereas
any bullet is gonna travel around on you.
A what?
Any bullet's going to travel on you unless it's a...
Yeah. I think what the old wives' tale was about the 22, I think you're referring to, Mary, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was that the bullet was so weak that once it penetrated the body, it could like bounce off bones,
certain
areas
because
of the muscle.
Because it wouldn't go right.
It won't go right through you, so therefore travel through your body.
Yeah, because it's not an in and out type of.
Yeah, it's
of bullet.
It's not like a 380 will probably do a little better.
But 380 is about the size of a 9. A 22 is, let's face it, a step above a pellet rifle, man. it's a small bullet. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a baby deal.
But it can kill you.
What's that?
It can kill you though.
There's no
22 long rifle is basically lethal out to about 300 yards, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Say again?
A 22 long rifle is lethal out to about 300 yards.
Oh, wow. Huh. 300 yards, huh?
Not 300
yards. I'm about to take out my class.
Huh. What happened?
I said I'm about to take class.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
JC, what are you trying to defend with the gun? Somebody trying to take your lasagna without asking?
Oh, yeah, you would.
You got that right, I would. That boy makes a damn good lasagna. Take a break, we'll be right back.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message. 4 years ago, we made history. Now it's time to move forward and finish what we started together. We have to show the president we have his back.
We can't afford to spend the next 4 years going backwards. I'm running to make sure that by the end of the decade, more of our citizens hold a college degree than any other nation on earth. I refuse to pay for another millionaire's tax cut by kicking children off of Head Start programs, or asking students to pay more for college, or eliminating health insurance for millions of poor and elderly and disabled Americans on Medicaid.
Have the president's back and register to vote. Go to gotavote.org to register now. That's gotavote.org.
You know we've got your back.
Paid for by Obama for America.
Last time on Reese on the Radio.
He said, I am the Joker. But once again, he was still walking into a movie theater that was showing the Batman.
So you're saying that this guy would have done what he has done, even if, like, Steel Magnolia was playing.
He just said, I'm the Steel Magnolia.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
If I don't recognize your name, you're a nobody. Look, I don't make this much beef about my broad getting into the house to cook me a meatloaf. But they're really excited about this guy going from one souffle to a big zucchini. I don't know what it is, but she can't stop yammering about this.
Was it Michael Simon?
That's him. That's the guy. That's the guy, Michael Simon. Never forget it. Okay, I'll always forget his name because he's a nobody. But anyway, Michael Simon, the bald-headed guy, right? That's him.
Right, right.
Okay, so yeah, he wears a lot of plaid.
Yeah, that's
him. Because he's dressed like the chef. Whatever.
He's an Iron Chef.
Yeah. Is he an Iron Chef?
Yeah, yes.
Is that significant?
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Is it a big deal in the foodie world?
Yeah, it is.
Really?
Yeah, it is. Pretty big.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
They can lick my balsamic vinegar.
It's Reese on the Radio weeknights right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest type. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyist.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reefs on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
We're back, Reefs on the Radio, 9 minutes to the top of the hour. I got Justin on the line, and I got to bring in Mike as well, because Mike, you gave me this story about the DC couple. I believe they're a gay couple, Michael and Michael. They were assaulted. Apparently, they're calling it a hate crime investigation. Michael Hall and his boyfriend, Michael Royke, or Royke, if that's the correct pronunciation. They said that they were ambushed by about five teenagers in Eckington section of Northeast D.C. And you said in, I think your, it was either your email or your tweet to me or something along that, was that, did you suspect that these were young black kids?
Well, yeah.
Well, has there been any confirmation with that?
Well, if you read the quote from the victim, who
right.
says, we were attacked because we were walking in a bad neighborhood after dark.
Ah, well, yeah, well, yeah, that sounds about
well,
right.
I don't know if, at what is it, in Eckington?
Yeah. Yeah, they said they were.
Because I was on 18th and M today.
Is that?
So I'm not sure, but that was Northwest. I'm not sure where Eckington is.
Well, that's northeast of
D.C. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that neighborhood either. But I want to ask a question, because Justin's a younger kid. I was under the impression that younger kids today, and okay, I'm probably going to make an assumption here, Justin, because you're white.
What?
I'm probably going to make an assumption here because you're white, that it's less likely for young white kids your age to attack gay people, or am I wrong here?
I don't know.
Okay, all right. See, he's such a good kid. He couldn't answer that question because he just doesn't hang out with people like that. I'll ask you this one. Based upon like your friends' schools, your peers, whatever it is, what do you think the overall atmosphere is with young people when it comes to homosexuals? Are kids more tolerant than they were during my day? Well, you wouldn't know what my day was. But would you deem your friends more tolerant or tolerant at all?
Yeah.
Okay. He's got a lot of one word answers today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a yes or no question.
I'm just asking. I thought he would elaborate a little further.
Come on.
So, is it safe to assume that because they were walking in a bad neighborhood that they were definitely around black kids? Because I know that young black kids can't stand homosexuals.
Well, yeah.
no dispute from anybody.
Whatever, right?
Not one dispute. Not even Derek. You're not even going to dispute this?
Dude, Reese, come on. You know I'm from the Caribbean community, man. That's not a, you know.
But now the media has a problem because you've got one protected class attacking another protected class. So
no, in a lot of Caribbean countries, you know, being gay is against the law.
Well, yeah, no, we're aware of that. But you're talking about the media here in this country. You got one protected class against another protected class. You're not going to show that these two groups have an issue with one another.
You're not going
to push that in any way. You don't even want to bring that to light.
Yeah, very true. But oh Lord.
You know, one of my favorite stories in Staten Island back in 2010 was this Mexican kid was in Staten Island, and he was a leader in a community center. It was supposed to be some kids that he was mentoring or whatever it was, and he told police that he was jumped and beaten down because he was Mexican. He said that one of the guys, the guy who beat him up, took his iPod and called him a spick, you know, or Mexican, whatever it was, and told them to, you know, get out of here, right? So they had police patrols and the big police armored trucks all around the neighborhood. All the local newspapers and news of vans were all in that neighborhood. There's a spike in this, you know, anti-Mexican, you know, attacks and all this other stuff. So this guy got major coverage, this Mexican kid, and all his good work. So they loved the story. They found out the 17-year-old kid beat up the Mexican, and they locked him up and put him in jail. 2 weeks later, they released the 17-year-old black kid, and they dropped all the charges. Now, only one news van was there when they released the 17-year-old black kid. The reason why they released him, because they found out that the Mexican had bought a bag of weed from the 17-year-old, said he didn't like the weed and tried to get his money back. They got into an argument. He whipped his ass. And after beating his ass, he took his iPhone. It had nothing to do with calling him a Mexican. And it turns out that the Mexican kid was a regular customer.
Hey, you pretty much get those money back on that deal. You just find some different weed guy.
Yeah, I mean, but he was, here it is. He knew that he was, like, he gets into a fight about weed. The newspapers jump at him and say, was it because you were Mexican? And he was so willing to go, yes, he called me a stick. I mean, it's incredible.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, you know.
But you know what? Here it was. When the news people found out that the black kid was being used for the narrative, they didn't even care. They were like, so what, nigga? You're just not on the... You're not low enough on the totem pole for us to care. And you know it's true, didn't you?
People cry wolf all the time, though, Reese. Yeah.
But, Derek, all the news bands from the local news and were there when they found out this beating took place. But when the kid got locked up, I mean, the kid was released and it was a false claim, only one network cared, the local WPIX.
Girl, I see it like this.
They're the lowest ratings in the tri-state area.
Look, Reese, you know, I remember when that whole situation went down in with the lacrosse thing, and I remember you asking me, did I believe that? And I told you, because you was on the radio back then, right?
Yeah,
and I told you that hoe was lying, man. I said she's lying.
You sure enough did tell me that she was lying. You didn't believe her one bit.
Hell no. I never believed none of them hoes, man. You know, and she had preachers and everything. She made everybody look like a fool. They ended up marching for this broad and everything. Come on now. People cry wolf.
On that one is she picked the lacrosse team to say this about. And lacrosse team at Duke is like number two as far as being big men on campus to the football team.
Right.
And Crystal Mangum was a beast. Dudes weren't going to jump on that big, beastly bitch. They have this choice of all the hottest girls at Duke.
You know, a great question. Isn't she in jail for murder?
Yeah, she's in jail for murder now.
Oh, she is?
She killed her boyfriend.
Wow.
Dude, it's an amazing story.
She's so ugly, if you stuck her face in dough, you'd make gorilla biscuits, okay?
Yeah, but shoot, they paid that bro to take his clothes off.
Yeah, but you know what that was. That was a bunch of white boys slumming. They said, let's get a nigger bitch in here to shake her ass.
I think they got surprised when she showed up. Actually, they were pissed off and didn't want to pay her.
That's probably it.
Because she
somebody
was like saying rings and drag.
Yeah, they were like, ooh, what's this?
What the hell did you send us? This ain't Halle Berry. Is this Michael Clark Duncan?
This ain't Halle Berry. This ain't Halle Berry. This bitch look like Chuck Berry.
Is this the Green Mile?
This like
Eric, man. Did you hear there was a home invasion murder in Pine Hills?
Yeah.
What the hell? They beat that old Mexican guy to death?
Dude, you know, I carry my pistol all the time with me, man. You know, I just, you know, hey, you know, I expect it now, you know.
especially Pine Hills. Dude, I've been down there. I went to a concert at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And people said, make sure you park here. Don't park off-site.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, you know, that's right over there near Mercy Drive, so, you know.
Hey, but the bottom line is, Derek even told me this. Even he asked the question, Reese, what do you mean you ain't got a gun? You better get your ass a gun.
Yeah, I tell you, Reese, I tell everybody when you're going to buy your first gun, go down to your local Walmart and buy yourself a Ruger 10/22 rifle. They're dirt cheap. They're totally reliable. You can get a 25-round magazine for it, and trust me, you're going to hit what you aim at, and they will leave you alone.
Nah, you know what, man? You know what? To be honest with you, you know what I feel everybody should get as a first gun, and don't laugh, because I'm telling you, it's a quality gun. It's just cheap. Dude, get yourself a High Point gun. High Points are cheap, but I'm telling you, man, you know, the suckers work, man.
Oh, yeah, they work. No doubt.
A 9mm?
What's it called,
Derek?
A
High Point 9. You know,
what's the price on it?
Probably about somewhere between $150 to $190.
Not
bad. Out the box.
They're
cheap, but I'm telling you, the guns work great, you know? It's
hey,
just
hey.
any respectable person, you know, won't carry that thing. Carry
Mike.
Yeah.
Do you know of any organizations where you can go to, like, that I could find one out here that would do an inexpensive class?
God, any gun range ought to do that for you. Are you actually in D.C. itself?
I'm like 20 minutes outside.
You're in, like,
Virginia,
Maryland or
Virginia?
Something?
No, I'm in Virginia.
Yeah, I just look for a gun range.
Yeah,
somebody will take your class, absolutely.
I went to, like, Gander Mountain and was going to take a class, but they wanted like $250.
Wow. I would find a local range and see what they have for you.
It was a class to get, because I wanted to get a concealed weapons permit.
Yeah, $200 is quite
expensive.
It's expensive?
That's a little much, yeah.
Okay.
Because your permit itself is going to cost you about that much.
Okay.
Mary's going to get a gun.
I'm telling you, Reese, 22 rifle. That's the best thing for somebody who's not an enthusiast.
Man. I love
22
rifle,
little bitty short thing. You ain't going to mess with it. You put 10 rounds cinematic, it will leave you alone. Guaranteed.
Yeah, and the bullets are cheap.
I'm going to look at
it. Do you know why I carry a 45? Because they don't make a 46.
All right, guys, that's our show. Hey, Edward, you barely even spoke, Edward. I'm sorry. We'll get to next time, guys. Thank you, everybody. Next Bounty Hunter, Mike in Florida, Edward in Connecticut, and of course, Justin in, where are you, in Maryland now?
Yeah, until Saturday.
Until Saturday. Don't worry. I'll see you before then. Guys, it's always a pleasure. We will see you tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Yes, I'm going to be using that a lot.